Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The coming of a new year is traditionally marked with a bubbly beverage. Instead of that sip of champagne, perhaps try something with more history and more tradition. The University of Texas at San Antonio Library's Special Collections hosts some traditional Mexican recipes for drinks dating back decades, even centuries. The Mexican Spirits Collection is part of a growing Mexican cookbook collection at UTSA that contains over 2,000 volumes dating from 1789 to the present. It's a collection that's studied by researchers, chefs, and curious community members. Amy Rushing is Assistant Dean for Special Collections at UTSA Libraries. She explains the origins of the collection.
The collection started actually with a donation around 2001 from a librarian who had traveled all over Mexico for 30 or 40 years, and she really loved Mexican food. So she would, as a librarian would do, she would go to bookstores and she would pick up cookbooks. And then eventually she decided, you know, this really should be in a place where it can be accessed by students and the public. So she chose UTSA Special Collections to donate the books to, and we had the collection. And, you know, we thought this was before my time, but I think over the years it became clear that there's really a deep connection here with Mexico and with food and with family. And as more people learned about this collection, we thought, you know, this is really special here. And so we decided that we're going to make this a collecting priority.
Have the people who have curated this collection, have they discovered that perhaps the recipes that have been handed down for decades and even centuries in certain cases, that they essentially remain unchanged?
I think some people see that recipes are the same, but I think they also see that there might be something a little different. And it's that familiarity, but then there's also something a little bit different, and it gets you thinking. I know with Rico Torres from Mishli, he always comes in and looks at our recipes, and he sees something, and he goes, wow, I would have never thought to put that in that recipe. So it's, yeah, it's both the familiar, but also learning something a little new about how a recipe may have been made 100 years ago, or maybe it's still the same.
So let's talk a little bit about the Mexican Spirits Collection. This grew out of the Mexican Cookbook Collection. What made you realize that the spirits needed, now I'm not talking ghost spirits, I'm talking drink spirits, why the spirits needed their own branch?
Well, just like with the Cookbook Collection, this was inspired by a donation. So in 2017, Tom and Lynn Crystal donated a small collection of photographs and sort of some ephemera related to the production of pulque. And they made this gift in memory of Charles Seifert, who's Tom's brother-in-law, who was really into tequila. He said, I've never met a tequila I didn't like. And from there, we thought, you know, this is interesting. Maybe, you know, we don't have a lot of books on cocktails or spirits. I mean, obviously, tequila is a very popular spirit, and we have cookbooks that contain recipes for cocktails made with tequila. But this wasn't really a strength in our collection. So we thought, well, this would be a great complement to the cookbooks. And also, I mean, pulque goes back forever and ever, you know, we were thinking that this is an area of growth for us. So we started looking for more books on recipes and the history of the production of mezcal and tequila, even sotol. And we'd like to continue growing this. And we recently acquired, also through a gift from Tom and Lynn Crystal, a broadside from 1750 regulating the sale of pulque to indigenous people. So this is an area, this is a new frontier for us, but it's very fascinating. And I think we'll be able to grow a collection that really complements the cookbook collection.
Well, you brought up that broadside. This is a pretty rare artifact, right? It dates back to 1750, Mexico's colonial period. The broadsides were meant to be posters. You know, you would see them plastered with political commentary or announcements, and they were normally disposed of when the time was due to take them down. So the fact that this one still exists, that's pretty remarkable.
It is. We have a few broadsides in our collection as a whole, but in terms of broadside relating to Mexican spirits, this is definitely the oldest, and it may be the oldest. I believe it is the oldest broadside that we have in all of Special Collections holdings. But these broadsides are really interesting. I like to joke that they're kind of the equivalent of a band flyer that you would find stapled to a power pole. They were not meant to be kept. They were often printed on really cheap paper, and they would just be hammered to the side of a building. And it could be a decree. It could be an advertisement. It could be an announcement, just anything that the public needed to know. We didn't have social media back then. So they would just be posted on the side of a building and oftentimes just ripped down and thrown away. So the fact that we still have this one, that it does exist, is very special and just gives you an opportunity to see something that not many people thought to keep around, you know?
And I think this is where the specialness, the uniqueness of a special collections library comes into play, because you have these old, I mean, this is what, 270-year-old piece of paper, and it's in good enough condition for you to put in the collection, but there's got to be quite a bit of preservation work that goes into something like this. So can you maybe detail what you had to do in order to help preserve this document?
Well, with all paper, it's very important to have the proper temperature and humidity controls. So we do have a climate control vault that we keep all of our rare books. Well, all of our materials, our archives and rare books. It's actually in really good condition to be as old as it is. We can handle it, obviously, with clean hands. But it's pretty remarkable that it's in as good a shape as it is.
Well, let's talk about some of these recipes you were talking about earlier from the Mexican Spirits Collection. These aren't necessarily recipes you can Google. Granted, you know, you can do a Google right. search and every other drink recipe will show up there. But this collection goes beyond that.
Right. This is not just recipes for cocktails, but also recipes on how to actually make a spirit. So tepache, for example, which is a fermented pineapple rinds, there are recipes for that. There are recipes for how to make pulque, which is the fermented agave sap. It's kind of a combination between the production of the actual spirits, but also recipes that contain the spirits, and then also the history of Mexican spirits. You know, it's fun to watch a collection like this grow because, you know, with the Mexican cookbook collection, it is so deep and so wide, and it spans such a long time period that you really do get to see a story unfold, or many, many, many stories. With this collection, because it's so small, you know, we're starting to build this, gather all of these different sides of the story and the sides of the history, that the picture starts to emerge. So it's really fun. Right now we have about 40 books in the Mexican Spirits Collection, but we're going to continue to look for more. And I'd even like to expand into things like labels from bottles. I think that could be a really interesting aspect of this history as well.
Amy Rushing is Assistant Dean for Special Collections at UTSA Libraries. When we come back, more on the Mexican Spirits and Cookbook Collections at UTSA, and no family gatherings means no tamaladas. Customers are flocking to buy tamales in the stores.
Some red, some green, and some turkey tails. Colitas de pavo.
Tamales in a pandemic, next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The Mexican cookbook collection at the University of Texas at San Antonio is made up of 2,000 volumes. It's extensive, but not off limits, even now in a pandemic. The University of Texas at San Antonio Libraries Special Collections put together two downloadable recipe collections called Cooking in the Time of Coronavirus. The most recent collection focuses on drinks. In the foreword to Recetas Volume 2, food writer and chef Adán Medrano writes about the global influence found in Mexican spirits. Drinks flavored with pineapple have origins in South America. A recipe for café de olla harkens to Ethiopia, the birthplace of coffee. Amy Rushing, Assistant Dean for Special Collections at UTSA Libraries, says Mexico found a way to adapt and incorporate a world of ingredients.
It's also interesting to see, so Adam mentions the paloma. For our holiday party, the library's holiday party, one of the activities that we did was we made a drink from the recetas as a, you know, a demo, and we were trying to find some of the information. Paloma was one of the drinks that we did, a non-alcoholic version, of course, because it was a work party. But we were having a really hard time finding some sort of definitive information about where the paloma came from, particularly made with grapefruit juice. You know, we had found references to just a paloma being squirt in tequila, but where did the grapefruit come in? That's what we think of, at least here we think of, and that Dom mentions the grapefruit, and some of the information that's on the internet is inaccurate about the history of where the paloma originated. So these are the types of things that I find fascinating and why it's so important to preserve these books and any information that we can find, because misinformation gets promulgated out there on the internet.
Boy, yes, we do know that now, don't we?
Yes, we do. So, you know, you would think that it would be easy enough to find out more information about paloma, but we just haven't found it yet. So if anyone knows, call me.
Well, I'm interested to know how the UTSA Library Special Collections is handling the pandemic, because there were always people there in the library to welcome people who wanted to come and perhaps see some of these special collections. I'm assuming that the library is closed and there are no visitors.
The library is open with limited services and hours, but Special Collections is closed. The reading room is closed. However, you know, we have a team of people that are working really hard to help people remotely as best we can. We are able to come in alone, you know, so one day a week, one person will come in and that's their day. And we've still been getting a lot of research requests. So we'll go in and try to help the patron remotely. So that has its challenges. There are a lot of photographs being taken on the cell phone and texting it to the person saying, is this what you were looking for? But I think we're doing a really good job, all things considered. We really pride ourselves on customer service, and we want to be able to help patrons as much as we can, even if they can't come in to view the collections in person. We have a lot of material already digitized, but as far as being able to actually handle the books, I know that it's just not the same as seeing a picture.
As you were mentioning, the digitization of much of the collection, it's online for maybe non-researchers who are maybe curious to learn more about the Mexican cookbook collection or to even download some of those special volumes that Special Collections has created regarding food in the pandemic.
Yes. So we have a little over 100 manuscript cookbooks. Those are essentially handwritten recipe books like your grandmother has, or maybe your mom keeps a handwritten recipe book. And the oldest that we have is from 1789, and we've digitized about half of those. So we have around 50-ish that are online that people can browse and look through. They're really fun to just sit and scroll through and look at the different recipes. Some of the handwriting is hard to decipher because it's very elaborate and scrolly and beautiful. It's a lost art, that's for sure. But some of them have drawings, little doodles in them. But we want to continue digitizing more of those and putting them online. The pandemic has slowed those efforts, but we're going to get back into it. And it's just a really great way to be able to share the cookbook collection with people who aren't able to travel to San Antonio. And then, of course, the recetas ebooks that we put online, those are easily accessible as well. And you can download a PDF version of it or even an ebook version if you wanted to open it on your Kindle.
So it sounds like it'd be a pretty great challenge for everybody who's been isolating at home, who's cooked every recipe on YouTube and they want to maybe try another challenge.
Yes, yes. That'd actually be really fun to take the whole cookbook and just say, okay, you pick a recipe and let's make it. And even if you have to share it over Zoom, would still be fun, a fun activity.
Well, hopefully somebody's out there to accept that challenge. I will not.
No, I'm not going to be making the quinceañera cake anytime soon.
Well, Amy Rushing, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you so much for spending the time with us.
Thank you, Norma.
Amy Rushing is Assistant Dean for Special Collections at UTSA Libraries. Find a link to the Mexican cookbook collection, to Recetas in the Time of Coronavirus, and to two unique recipes for horchata at tpr.org. It's the season for tamales in Texas. Current restrictions on family gatherings have put a halt to in-person tamaladas, when friends and family would get together and divvy up tamal-making tasks, like making the masa or filling the hoja. KTEP's Angela Cocherga reports the pandemic has resulted in a boon to the commercial tamal trade in El Paso.
The phone rings nonstop, and a line stretches out the door at Bowie Bakery in El Paso. The shop allows three customers inside at a time as a COVID precaution. The bakery is busier than usual this holiday season.
We're buying red tamales for the office. We figured we'd spread some holiday cheer.
Fred Lopez ordered some traditional red chile pork tamales for his engineering firm.
So everybody's working from home, but today people are stopping by to pick up some things for the holidays, so we figured we'd surprise them with tamales.
Takeout tamales might be the only way many El Pasoans get their supply this year.
A lot of people, older, especially older people, have died or have had to be quarantined from the whole family.
Juan Carlos Favela says COVID has taken a toll on the tradition.
And those people were usually the ones that kind of brought the whole family together.
They were the keepers of the recipes. Favela owns La Primera Tortilla Factory, a family-run business that sells masa, the cornmeal dough, for tamales.
In fact, I have had a couple of customers call and ask for recipes on how to do the tamales because of their grandmas, their mothers passing away and stating that now they're going to have to do them by themselves.
We lost their voices as we watched over us. Those voices are the voices of our ancestors.
Author and poet Benjamin Alire Sainz lives in El Paso. He has fond memories of making tamales with his family just across the state line in rural New Mexico. His brothers and sisters continued the tamale-making tradition after his mother died a few years ago.
She left us her wisdom, and part of those wisdom is in the making of tamales, because people get together and they tell stories, and we can't even get together and tell those stories at this moment.
COVID has only accelerated the modern-day trend of busy families buying tamales. Stuffing all those corn husks with masa and fillings is labor-intensive.
We have that green chili green chicken, and we have that green chili green chicken.
Lupita's Tamales has been in business 35 years. The line is always long during the holidays, but this year it's even longer. Tamale sales are a bright spot for restaurants that are struggling because of COVID, says owner America Sanchez.
Well, we do want to keep the business, and we want to keep it going for the families here, you know, and everybody that works here. And also, well, for them to have something good to eat as well.
Teresa Cordell was picking up something good to eat at Lupita's.
Some red, some green, and some turkey tails. Colitas de pavo.
She used to make tamales with her children when they were living at home.
Believe it or not, we switched it over to brisket with red chili barbecue.
That's the thing about tamales. The recipes and the memories are as unique as the families who make them. I'm Angela Cocherga in El Paso.
Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Brie Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.